You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
This was me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm joined today with my guest, Todd Milner. How are you doing today, Todd?
Doing great. Good to see you again, Sam.
Good to see you, too. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Actually, I'm having a moment of realization. I think you and I first met at Kansas City B2B. It was, and it was when you were presenting on the Father's Club. Does that sound right?
Exactly right. It was, and I believe an individual who introduced us, his name was Randy Bratton, who also works with the Father's Club. So a combination of those two things on that event. Yep, that's exactly right.
That sounds right. So tell us, I mean, you're working on a slew of things kind of right now. Tell us what it is exactly you're working on. And I like to tell folks, if you wanted to, this is your opportunity to platform. Let somebody know who Todd is that doesn't know who Todd is.
Wow, that's an open-ended question that could take the whole entire podcast. But let's see, I'll run through a quick list. What pays the bills, my Monday through Friday, if you will, W-2 is with CBIZ, Financial Accounting Tax and Audit Firm. I do business development for them here in the Midwest. So that pays the bills. And a large office here in Kansas City keeps me extremely busy. If I'm not doing that, then I'm leaning into Father's Club. It's a mission started in 2018 to get dads more proactive and engaged in middle schools and high schools. Now we're even kind of moving into elementary schools. There's 40 plus chapters in the Midwest here, mostly in Kansas City. And my role has kind of changed over the years. I was on the board, just recently stepped off after almost 8 years, led the mental wellness workshops for men, dads, if you will, helped some of the chapter chairs grow their chapters, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of fun stuff there related to just getting dads more motivated to be in their kids' lives. C-Suite for Christ is a new venture that I started here in March. Again, leaning into a mission to try to help business leaders, right? Lead with their faith, how to be more bold and be encouraging and connect with other business leaders here in the Kansas City market. And so that's C-Suite for Christ. I'm the market president, and 6 months under my belt, and we're making a few inroads, and we're having a little bit of an impact. Things take time, as we all know. Mixing our faith and business sometimes can be a challenging topic. So we're navigating that as well as we can. Not far behind that has been starting a coaching and leadership practice kind of fueled by Five Capitals. Five Capitals is a great place for just coaches and mentoring and content. They provide a great platform. And then within that Five Capitals, I've created my own coaching sort of practice called M5, which M5 has got four components to it. I won't drill into it, but M5 is the movement that I'm starting my coaching business with. So if those things aren't keeping me busy enough, I've got 320-somethings running around the country. My son Ethan is in LA, 27. My daughter here, one of my two daughters is here in Kansas City, is starting in EMT school. And then my baby girl, the youngest, is up in Lincoln, Nebraska, just about ready to wrap up her third year of law school and head off to be an attorney and save many from legal, whatever they do over there. So anyway, that's the world I live in, single dad, trying to manage that world with 20-somethings and undo all those other things, lean into missions and serve others.
That's very exciting. That is, that's quite a lot of stuff for sure that we could lean into. And you and I think have had extensive discussion just on kind of like the Father's Club. But I think, you know, sooner rather than later, I'll kind of take us into how we initially start this podcast. So Todd, that's where you're at currently. You've got a lot of irons in the fire, a lot going on all at once, a lot of passions and things you're moving forward. Let's kind of rewind the clock here now. Let's set that aside for just a moment, and we're going back to high school, a high school aged, you know, 16, 17, Todd Milner. What is it you're planning on doing with your life? What is the world telling you you need to be doing? What are some of the variables at float right now that has Todd like, I'm going to do this.
Wow, that is a long time ago. The 80s, what a great decade to be in high school and college, both. I cleared, nine years of education in the 80s, so I'm an 80s child. What does Todd Milner think he should be doing at 15, 16, 17? You know, honestly, I don't think he really had a clue what he wanted to do. And there are some times in life where you wake up and you're well past 16 and you're still trying to answer that question, right? What I did know was I wanted out of small town Kansas, and I had my sights set on early on heading to college, and it was going to definitely be the purple and white at K-State. So I knew that right out of the gate. Grew up in a small town in central Kansas, you know, graduating class of 62 people. Total of 260 people in the whole entire high school, right? So small town and environment. Grandparents were farmers, so I spent a ton of time out in the country on the farm, helping, working, and you know, doing those kinds of things. And you know, as I think back to that, just that time frame, I knew I enjoyed embracing and spending time with people. A bit of an extroverted personality, although the introverted parts of me are starting to come out as I get older. But I just kind of knew that was what I wanted to do. So off I went to K-State, and, you know, in the early 80s, or that would have been 83, 84 time frame, you know, PCs were just coming about, personal computing, Apple computer was launched in the early 80s, right? Well, I should be, you know, something related to technology. And so I went down the computer science path and started doing punch cards and programming. And it took me one semester to figure out that wasn't anything close to what I wanted to do. And after one full year, there was no major, there was no minor, there was nothing related to COBOL and what were the some of the crazy programming languages back then that may not even exist anymore. And so I went down the business route and management, marketing, and that kind of thing. So. But back then, you know, it was just enjoying life. There was no phones. You know, we had CB radios and 8-track and or cassette players and small town. And, you know, you just I don't know. I as I think back on those times, you know, there were a handful of guys said, yeah, I'm going to be an attorney because that's what my dad was, or I'm going to be this because that's what my mom was. But I never really figured that out. You know, it took me well of 5 years at K-State to sort of get to that point in and, you know, kind of get a degree that I thought might be useful and, you know, help me in life.
So what I'm hearing, probably your big motivating factor at the time was get out of a small town. Is that safe to say? And with all the, so for anybody on audio only, he's got so much K-State paraphernalia in the background. Is it safe to say K-State did that for you?
100%. What K-State did was got me out of small town, but it also surrounded me with a whole lot of like-minded people from small towns. Right. And, you know, if you compare and contrast the two universities here in Kansas, you know, K-State tends to be more that small town, anything west of Topeka, if you will, Kansas, and KU is sort of the opposite, come from the city, Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis kind of thing. And so I found myself moving out of small town, but then comfortable with a lot of the people that were there because we kind of had a lot in common.
So did that kind of help? Did that kind of help a transitional sort of period? Because I have, it's interesting. I've talked to different people that come out of really small towns and then just like jump into, say, Kansas City. And it's a little bit of a culture shock, I think.
Yeah.
Because while I think Kansas City is still kind of small to say, like, I don't know, like a New York or something, it's definitely not the same as like a small town vibe, like what you're describing with high school.
Yeah. You know, the transition to college was pretty easy. I had been on my own since probably 11 or 12. You grew up in a small town in a split family. You live with your mom who's working three jobs and a younger brother, and you find yourself kind of just doing your own thing because that's just how you have to. And the community really raised the concept of the saying, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, was very true in many respects growing up in, you know, since I was, what, 10 or 11 years old up until 18. So making a transition, living on my own, man, I was dying to do that. And I already had been doing it for the most part anyway. So it's just great to be able to do it with a different address and not have people that, you know, kind of watching out and looking over at you and seeing, you know, are you in trouble? Did you do that? What are you doing? Why, you know, those kinds of things. So yeah, no, it was a good transition.
Good. Good. That sounds difficult. So you said more or less you're kind of helping take care of yourself and your younger brother at 11. Did I get that right?
Correct. Yep.
And so, and in the main, then it sounds like the town, you know, no, I think you described obviously no smartphones, none of that, none of the internet. So in the main, you're getting about town. And in general, the neighbors are kind of helping raise. Are you getting into trouble? What are you doing? Are you a little bit of a troublemaker?
Arguably? Not at all. No, not really. I'm sure I had my fair share of silly things and things that you look at your 20-somethings or teenagers and just hope and pray they don't do the same things because the world's just different than it was then, right? I mean, we're in a town of two stoplights. I mean, how much trouble can you really get in? Right. And so, no, I wasn't a troublemaker at all. In fact, I was probably the opposite of that. But again, like anybody growing up, you do silly things and, you wish it, many years later, you wish or you wouldn't have, or at least you learn from them. You hope anyway.
OK, so getting back into college then. So you said it took you about 5 years to kind of decide what it was you wanted to major in. And that was ultimately business. Did I get that right?
Correct. Marketing and management degree within the business college. Yep.
Okay, so then what's your first role out of college? What's that first job that's like, ah, we need somebody in marketing and business?
So
Todd guy, we like him.
When your GPA is below 3.0, your first job is to build a big folder of rejection letters because you go to one interview after another interview after another interview, and you watch all your buddies and friends who are going to work for Coke Industries and Cargill Industries and, you know, all the big companies that come on campus to do recruiting for marketing and sales kinds of roles, and you just get one rejection letter after another, right? And so the initial
role. And is that because I'm going out on ignorant. Help walk me through this. Is that because it's at the top of your resume? Is that because they're calling the college? Like,
I think it's a combination of the interview, the skills and the things you don't know at 22, 23 when you're interviewing for that first job, and then the GPA, right? So many, and this is 1988, okay? So you got to go backwards a little bit to kind of understand it. And GPA was an important part of that, right? Where my strength was, what I stood on and what I felt confident in is I'd worked myself through college. I'd worked since I was 12 years old, on and on and on, right? I paid for myself to go to college myself. Nobody's going to help me if I didn't do it. So those were the kind of things that I felt were more important than, you know, did I get a 3.85 in marketing and management? And so the first job I took was really sort of an odd industry. And you know, as I look back on it, it was a great learning experience, but thankfully I'm not in it anymore, was I went into finance and insurance in the car business. And I didn't go to work for a used car dealer. And people would say, you know, you think about dealerships and buying a car and that whole just not fun concept or whatever. That was there. But the company that hired me was a national company that placed individuals around the country. And so their training and sort of the process they went through really taught you a lot about business. And you really learned quickly a lot about people. If you didn't learn it in college or you didn't learn it in some other industry, you really learned quickly about people and people's skills in the role. And so that was my first job, moved me to Wichita, Kansas, and spent not quite two years doing that before I finally got myself into more of a, what I would call a professional sales or marketing role, that was more aligned with what I wanted to do with my life.
And you said finance and insurance in the car. Were you in the dealership or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
okay.
You know, you go buy the car, you get it all done and you're either going to write yourself a check, go to your own bank. Or write them a check, go to your own bank, or you can provide, you go to the dealership can provide financing for you. And that's what I did.
Okay.
We were the mean guys in the office that had to finish up all the paperwork when you were ready to get out of there and you'd spent 8 hours trying to buy a car and trade your other one in and the whole experience, right? Think about you can't think about the 80s, the car experience. Way different than buying a car today. Way different.
Well, but even like today, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, I've got, family and friends kind of in the industry. And so it's interesting to talk through. I think so much more happens behind the scenes that I didn't even realize. I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of statistics and data and personalities involved in buying a car. It's not something I ever thought about. All I ever thought about was, to your point, go to buy a car, haggle a little bit, sign all the paperwork, and then leave. But what I kind of want to get in this moment is, I want to buy a car. That sales guy wants me to buy a car. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Todd wants to make sure the deal goes through and Sam pays. Now, if Sam can't pay, Todd's probably going to be the guy to shut it down. Is that fair?
Yeah. My goal was to make sure the sale and the transaction was completed and do it as easy and frictionless. That the word
frictionless.
As possible. Right. And sometimes people will come in and had no idea how to buy the car they desired. Sometimes people would come in and owe way more on the car they own than the one that they're getting ready to buy, but that didn't matter. As you can imagine, in our country, we make a lot of silly financial decisions. So my role was try to figure out how to save the transaction, move the transaction through the process to you walking out with a smile on your face, enjoying what you just purchased.
Gotcha. So, yeah, it sounds like it could have been a difficult role at times.
Technology was really not available then. And so, how you buy a car today, how you educate yourself, how you go through and find what you want, how you pick where you're going to go to do that, just entirely a different process.
How so?
Well, none of that was available then. So you found yourself going, well, I'm going to go to this dealership over here, and then I'm going to drive across town to this one, and I might go to the next little community out in the, wherever to see if they've got a better deal, and on, and back and forth. And you do that a handful of times. And you would spend way more time in the back and forth, the haggling, than you do today.
That's fair.
Yeah. Mm.
So what was your next role after that?
So I left that industry, and thankfully I stepped out of that into the cell phone industry. Think about the cell phone industry. This would have been 91, so it was a little less than 3 years in the auto industry. And I moved from Wichita to Kansas City, and I was looking for a traditional, more true sales and marketing kind of role. So I started in a business development role with a company called Macaw Cellular One. Back in the day, it was brick phones, if you remember of a brick phone, nothing close to this, and bag phones and car phones. And so my role is I had a zip code or zip codes, had a geography here in Kansas City, and it was knocking on business doors, and it was trying to help individuals. And at one juncture in that role, I was given the luxury of covering both the Chiefs and the Royals. So think about players that don't live in the community. They go off to their hometown, season's on. They come back in for training, get ready for the season. They got to hook up their wife's phone, their phone, their car phone, whatever it all. And so those processes, I would manage a lot of that. So that gave me an opportunity to sort of create, not only on paper, but as well as experience-wise, an opportunity to say, Todd knows how to get into business development. He's good at sales and marketing aspects of that, so that was here in Kansas City, and it did that for not quite 2 years, which led me into healthcare with a company called Abbott Laboratories. But before we go there, Macaw Cellular One, I do have, a couple great examples of when we think about professional sports players, we usually put them into categories of, financially, we'll put them into different categories. Baseball players grow up on little to no money coming up through the minors, riding around on a bus all over the country, playing baseball constantly with the hope and the goal and the dream of making it to the big leagues and signing a big contract, right? And so they grow up in a world where they're kind of, you know, they have to live on little and nothing for a chunk of their life before they hit the bigs. Football players, on the other hand, more times than not, they walk in the NFL with a multi-million dollar contract, and they went from having nothing to gazillions of dollars, right? And so their ability to manage their finances and their phones and everything, it was quite interesting. So that was one piece of it. The second piece of it was back in the day when we went from a brick phone to what they called, Motorola made a little thing called a Microtech, and it was a flip phone. And I sold the first two flip phones in the entire country to the two owners of what was Cerner, now it's Oracle here in town, Neil Patterson, Cliff Illig. And I heard from them almost weekly on how bad the phone was, how poor service they got, on and on and on. So I got to know those two executives fairly well, sometimes not in a great way, by doing that. So that was an interesting role, selling cellular service, let's just say that. That was the days of a brick phone and a pager.
Well, and I'm just thinking about, too, you know, brick phone, briefcase phone. I mean, it's, and correct me if I'm way off, but I don't think I am. For some reason, it is really easy to put my head in that sales role. You know, you think, to your point about the cell phone and the store up the road, right? That's a whole different sales experience. You're describing a world where there's this niche product that kind of works, but this is so far beyond where anybody is at right now that you're having to educate people. I mean, it's an education-based sales, but it's also kind of sales that, like, you can't just go, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting the impression you can't just go door to door. You have to kind of niche down in order to get enough sales at all.
You're going to go through referrals from individuals that you meet through their companies, as well as individuals that maybe call in and are in your territory and you take care of. But yeah, you're not doing door-to-door sales necessarily. You're doing an education on hardware, and you do an education on why their network or your network is better than the next one. And there were many, many different networks at that time that had roaming agreements. There are like today where you have AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon are kind of the big dogs. There wasn't that at all. It was a very desegregated marketplace. And so within Kansas City, you had a lot of different cell networks to choose from. And then the hardware wasn't nearly like it is today. And so, but there was enough out there that you had to kind of talk through. Why would you want a portable phone versus a car phone versus the bag phones, right? So there was a little of that. But it was a hustling job. It was 100% commission. You got a small little stipend against your commission, but you had to hustle every month. And, you know, you're compared constantly to your peers. Every week you started out the week with, what have you done and what are you going to do? And so it taught you a lot about your ability to go out and some weeks and some days create something from nothing.
What had you transition to that? You said 100% commission. What had you transition from, you know, insurance and finance at a dealership to, and these are very different roles.
Yeah. So that the first job was the first job. And you learn a lot in your first job about what you want, what you don't want. And I knew I didn't want to be in that industry, period, end of story. But I was there because, unlike today, some conversations I have with my own 20-somethings, you know, you may not like it. Go try it. Learn from it. Fall down. Get back up and then go do something different, right? And so back then it was, well, this job pays pretty well. And yes, I got to work 6 days a week, but it gives me that experience to the next thing. And that next thing happened to be McCaw Cellular One. And then that next thing was, okay, well, this is great, but I'd like to have a more professional sale. I want to move the bar a little bit further. And what's that going to look like? Well, healthcare at the time sounds like a great opportunity to get into, and diagnostic testing, call on laboratories and, you know, equipment and those kind of things. And listening to people who were in the industry, a couple of friends say, yeah, this is a great industry. You should look at it. So navigating my way into that, you know, again, just took the conversation, the discussion, the type of professional product or solution you're selling to another level.
Were you, did you have a family at this point?
I did not. No, I was, okay. That was early days. That was still in my 20s, late 20s.
Okay. I'm just trying to get the perspective of, okay. I'm just trying to get the angle on you're going out there just at commission only. That's exciting. In a very early sector of something that would become very, very exciting, right? But at the moment is only so glamorous. Nobody quite knows what it is or why it would be valuable or why I would want it, but it's here and you're going and educating people. And there's some business owners and some athletes that are jumping in and saying, you know, yeah, sign me up for the briefcase phone.
Fast forward to today, how many positive experiences have you had walking into a T-Mobile, Verizon, or AT&T store and upgrading your phone? How many?
I don't walk into the store. I just don't want to do that.
Most people don't. So what's funny is it's kind of the way it started, and it made some progress, but it really is still kind of the same business and the same kind of very transactional kind of relationship, right? That's the other part of sales and marketing that I learned as I was going through is there's the transactional parts of any job if you're in sales and marketing. I would argue maybe in any parts of your life. But then there's the relational sides of the business or what you do professionally. And that was hard to find in the car industry for sure. In the cellular business at the time, absolutely. And then as you moved into, you know, other roles, that's where that became much more important, was building those relationships and helping others, you know, win whatever their win was, as opposed to it's a transactional thing. I have this, you want it, here you go for whatever price, and rinse, repeat, et cetera.
Well, and so to expand just a little bit, and to your credit, I think exactly, part of the reason I don't go into the stores is because there's two carriers, at least for us personally, that we're in pretty good with, and the account managers for both have been pretty fantastic. Early on in business, I realized it was about relationship for sure. And so at this point, our account manager at one, he's like the manager of the whole department now. Of course, he'll just pick his favorite rep and then pair me up with them, and they'll right. facilitate the transaction at the time. And then the other carrier, used for other reasons, they like us so much that anytime there's a new package, he just calls me up and says, hey, we've got this new package. I don't know if it lines up with anything you've got or not. He knows what my initiatives are for them. But, you know, it's a great example of, you know, if you walk in and make it transactional, that's all it'll ever be. Mm. If you make it relational, to your point, the carriers aren't really great at this. I think it's just because I'm on the business side. That's the only reason it's more relational. On the person side, it is definitely you walk into the store and it is what it is. Some of the carriers too, I'm sorry, we'll end up down a rabbit hole. I got to be careful. But some of the carriers, I kind of joke, there's one in particular that is so big that unfortunately the only way to really get anything done, you've got to kind of explore the legal regulatory route. And even then, I don't know how much you'll actually move the needle. They're just so it's not even, I tell people, I'm like, I don't hold anything against them. It's just that they're so massive and the different departments themselves are so big and they don't commingle well. So right. if you have a problem that will move from one department to another, which is any problem that's like an actual problem, by the way, not something that's like unplug it and plug it back in.
Right.
Your odds of like getting them to solve that are rare. You're better off almost just canceling your cell plan and starting another one.
Right.
Anyway, so okay. Fascinating industry. How did you handle? So you got to know some powerful people that bought a cell phone that didn't like it. How are you handling? And it's not your fault. It's the nature of the beast at the time. All these different carriers. How are you handling that? That could be kind of a frustrating thing, right? When you don't have any control over, and yet it does kind of reflect on whether you want it to or not.
Yeah, I think you're always looking, at least in the early days, of my career. I think I looked at, if I take care of you, no matter what, that generally will be beneficial to me in the future, whether that be you wanting to do something more with me or you making a referral to somebody, you know, friends, family, colleagues, et cetera, et cetera. And so I guess I got that instilled in me through my grandparents as a little kid. Somewhere down the road, it became an important thing. And so during those periods of time, they called and I answered the call, right? I didn't put them to voicemail or whatever we had at the time. And it didn't take 2 or 3 days to get back to them. And I always had a good solution. And if I didn't have a good solution, then I would connect them with the right people so that they understood it wasn't me who was not being able to produce things. It was fill in the blank, Motorola at the time, or the service provider, whatever it might be, right? And so they always knew I had their back. And I would always say, I'm your advocate. And you're going to have problems. And I want to be the first one to know, even though that may not be the first phone call you could make. You could call customer service, but why would you do that? Call me and let's figure it out. And so, you know, you think about that concept early on and just that environment, and you fast forward through all the different things I've done in my professional career. And, you know, it's really about serving others, right? And had I learned that in earlier, or not learned that, had I applied that in a much more diligent way throughout my career, how sometimes I think things would have been different. Because I don't know that you really understand, if I understand and I build a relationship with Sam, and I know what's important to you, and I know what you're attempting to do, where your wins are, and I support you in that, I help you in that, right? Then if I do that to Sam and the next one and the next one and the next one and on and on and on, over time, you're going to be served and you're going to be successful and you're going to hit your quota and you're going to meet this requirement and your boss is going to give you an attaboy or an attagirl. It's a simple concept, but sometimes we get caught up in the, well, how many phones do I have to get connected this month? How many medical devices do I have to sell this month to meet somebody's requirements set in agreement that I signed or a quota that I was given, or on and on and on. And so we think kind of that transactional way until we finally start to slow down enough and get mature enough in our individual self and understanding that it's okay to not think about those things, but help others. If I just help enough people, I mean, Ziegler said it forever, right? If I help enough people get what they want, I'll get what I want. And so I think those concepts sort of existed in my head and my heart over the young days, but they really didn't come out until later on. And I think that's just a sense of, or just a process that comes through maturity. We all have to grow up at some point, and you hopefully learn from your mistakes, and you just get better each and every time, every year, and every time you interact with someone.
Well, I feel like there's probably stages of that one too, because I remember mindset shifts specifically on that, like exactly what you're talking about. You know, when I first started the business, it was definitely, you know, I wanted help. I want to be as helpful as I can possibly be, right? And then the business grows. And then there was definitely a stint in there, right, where mentors and coaches, you know, it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. How many phone calls did you make? How many emails did you send? How many? And on one hand, it's weird because on one hand, there's value to that. You need to know your numbers. And I mean, you definitely need to be, I don't know, working within those efficiently and effectively. But I've definitely noticed if you get hung up on the numbers only, you lose the person component. And what's worse is you get less of what you want, right? Because now you're just a cold calling, annoying individual who's slammed a list of 100, but maybe only booked one appointment or whatever.
Right. If my win is to close $1 million of business in a month, a quarter, a year, whatever, if my win is to sell 100 of this or 5 of this or 20 of this, if those are my wins and I approach the conversation with, well, this is my win, I got to figure out how to have you help me with my win. More times than not, I'm going to fail, or it's not going to be long term. But if I reverse that mentality, I go, what's your win? How do I help you with your win? And sometimes that's going to mean you're going to help me with mine because we're going to do business together. But many times it may be that what your win is and my win. And so I'm helping you do something that doesn't directly relate to a transaction I would like to do between the two of us. Okay. I got to be okay with that. Right. And being okay with that just means I'm looking at the value of the relationship through how I serve and help you or help others. And I look at it over long term. I don't look at it as, well, what's this month? What's this quarter? What's this year? Right. And I don't know that you understand that in your 30s. Maybe you do, but you don't until your paths start crossing with clients and customers and colleagues over time in different roles. And you're like, wow, we worked together and I'm really glad that I never burned that bridge. I'm really glad that you thought highly of me. I'm glad that fill in the blank, because so many times that could have turned out way different. And you know, what you were desiring, maybe you're making a career change or getting promotion, and somebody in that circle of influence just how happens to be somebody you used to work with 10 years ago. So.
So fast forwarding on your career walk, what's kind of your next big position, so to speak? So if you were to pick another kind of key role you've played along the lines getting to here, what would that next one be?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there were multiple roles within healthcare, and specifically in biotech and diagnostic equipment or hardware. And those were, there were three different companies over a spread of about 10 years that were part of my world when I got married. They're part of my world when my first child, second child, trying to think out loud here. First two of the three were born. And then I moved from healthcare into technology at 1999. And so as I think about healthcare and IT, if I was going to put my arms around my professional career, most of that time has been spent in one of those two areas or some combination of both, where technology is part of the healthcare segment, and I'm specific to that marketplace as opposed to maybe oil and gas or another industry. And so those roles were a combination of, you know, individual contributor roles, marketing, product management roles. I took I would call it kind of a left turn, because I spent a lot of time in sales and business development, and I wanted to go into the internal side of the business and learn marketing. So I wasn't, you know, directly interfacing with clients. I wasn't carrying any kind of quota. I was working on, you know, how do I support that sales team or that sales org out in the field? What do they need in terms of product development and marketing and collateral and positioning and strategic planning and thinking? And then internally, how do we take a product that, you know, is not available or approved in the U.S., but is in Europe, and how do we make that available to thought leaders in particular industries, and how do we engage and get the technology? And that was interesting. It was a marketing role that was different, and not something that I would have. I did it for a while. I'm like, okay, I learned a lot. Not what I want to do with the rest of my life. So there was those pieces. But again, that's probably a long-winded answer to what you're asking, but most of it has been in that area. And then there was a small stop in another industry we can talk about too.
Well, can you give me a success story within that? Because what I'm hearing is a lot of sales and marketing strategy for teams and new market products. So can you give me kind of a one that's like, oh man, this is going to be really, really hard, most likely, or it was harder than you thought it would be. You're like, this will be easy. It's like, whoa, no, this is going to be way harder than I thought it would be. But you feel like you hit a home run.
Well, I'll give you two examples in two different industries, one in healthcare with Abbott Laboratories. And, you know, I lived in Wichita at the time, and I was covering basically the central and western parts of the state, and my clients were large medical clinics and hospitals. So I had a Ford Taurus station wagon with diagnostic equipment on a gurney in the back, and I was 1,000 miles a week road warrior. I was hitting every town, every little hospital, every clinic out in that area, right? And so, you know, I was putting 4,000 to 5,000 miles a month on a Ford Taurus station wagon and just on the highway constantly. And great example of doing one more thing, I'm going to do one more. I'm going to pick up the phone one more time today before I shut down shop, right? I'm going to make one more stop. I'm going to fit whatever it is, right? Friday afternoon, I'm headed back and it's 3:34 o'clock and I'm driving through a little town, Western Kansas. I won't mention the town, but you know, I'm about ready to get to the edge of town and clear it and just keep on going. And something inside me says, nope, you need to stop. What else you got going on? I got nothing going on Friday night when I get back home. So why not? So I do a quick U-turn, pull into the hospital parking lot, go in. And I'm like, is the lab director available for a few minutes? Just wanted to introduce myself and blah, 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 as you might do. Right. And individual comes up and the lady says, well, he's in a meeting, but he said, why don't you just come on back? And he'll meet with you. And it just so happens he's in the meeting with the COO and the CFO of the hospital. And they all are kind of done with their meeting. And they're just like, hey, come on in. I think it was most people would not have stopped. And most people don't stop. And it just so happens the conversation was around upgrading a whole bunch of diagnostic equipment. And so I literally walk into one of the... As a sales individual, you couldn't ask for a better environment and an invitation in to have that conversation that was already kind of preloaded and ready to go for you. It was teed up. I mean, that doesn't ever happen. Small town in nowhere, Kansas. And so I sit down, introduce myself. They start asking questions. I start giving answers. And 2 weeks later, I had a proposal completed and signed. It was one of the larger equipment sales transactions I had made for the year. It just so happened that transaction pushed me over the edge and I qualified for President's Club. If I keep driving, which is really easy to do a Friday at 3 o'clock or 3:30, knowing you still have another 2 hours, 2.5 hours drive home. If I just keep driving, I don't get that sale. I don't build that relationship. I don't go to President's Club, which actually ended up 2 President's Clubs back to back. And then I got a promotion out of it because of the performance. And so it is a great example personally, as well as that I tell my children all the time, when you think you're kind of done, when you're just tired, you just don't feel like doing that one more thing in life, do the one more thing and see what happens. And more than likely that one more thing will produce something good. So that's one great example. Another one is, and feel free to tell me you want to.
There's two things I really want to talk about in here, just personally. And I think I'll hit on the second one than the first one if I had to pick one.
Okay.
I've noticed that same thing. What do you think that is? So I kid you not, the one networking meeting I don't want to go to, where I'm going to meet a bunch of people, right? I'm just worn out. I'm tired. It's a long, and you know, sometimes we stay home, but I tend to try to push through it and go. If it's on my calendar, if I plan to go, you know, I might be tired. I might be, but I'd probably make it anyway. It's always that one that I meet someone that moves the needle in a very significant way than any other meeting that had ever been had before. Which is half the reason I was planning on not going anyway, right? It's like, this last month hasn't been productive and I'm worn out and I'm tired and I just don't want to go. But then you go anyway, and then that's the one. It's like, what are the odds? What are the odds? What is that?
Isn't that life in general, though? I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be boiled down to just our professional lives, in as much as that's probably where we measure it mostly, is that one phone call, that one meeting I go to, that one event that, you know, I'm going to go meet a bunch of people I don't know, and I got to, you know, get business cards out, and I got to actually, you know, go shake hands and kiss babies and do all these things that I'm really tired and I don't want to do it, right? I think it really boils down to just making a little more effort than the next person. And the majority of people in the world, whether you're in sales or marketing or any role you're in or just in life, are comfortable just kind of here. And those that exceed and excel and get the reward, fill in the blank for what that looks like, are always the ones that just do one more thing, just a little more that one day, that 1 week. And, you know, it's sort of like being a parent. I know you're a young parent. I'm a few years ahead of you in terms of the being a father. You do all these things with an expectation that you'll probably never see the reward, but you keep doing them. And then one day you get the phone call, you get the text, you get the FaceTime, you get the, hey, dad, you know, and you're like, ah, the tank's refilled again. So much like what you said is I went to that meeting or I go to these meetings and I meet somebody who was really important to what I want to do in my life. Well, that sort of refills the tank so that you're ready to go do that again. You wake up the next week, the next day, prepared to go, I can do that again. I can do that again. Right. I don't know. I think it's just effort. And I just don't think most people want to make the effort. And in our world today, where we live in screens and we live in social media and technology that kind of runs AI that starts running our world, it makes it even more difficult, in my opinion, to want to do those things because it's so easy to punch a button or tell somebody else to do it for you, right? And I don't know. That's just back to relationships. And, you know, I can just picture that meeting in that hospital literally like it was yesterday. So, But good question.
So the next bit, and this is a bit little selfish, so as little as we need to take on this, but I do have the question, what would you say is kind of the, do you have some tips or tricks to get it? So in that scenario, right, you imagine it's the salesman dream. You've got everybody in the room you need to talk to, and they happen to be talking about exactly what you want them to talk to, but that rarely happens. Right. So for anybody listening that's kind of like, you know, I mean, we're all in sales, really, to some degree, whether we admit it or not. How do you navigate making sure everybody that you needed in the room is in the room?
Wow, that's a tough question, because I think it never works out the way you want it to. I think getting all decision makers in the room is a combination of things. It's one, why do they care? Why is it that they're going to give you 5 minutes or 50 minutes of their time, and making that relevant to the individuals that are on their team as well as them. That's the first thing. I don't want to just do a meet and greet. I don't have time to meet Todd. I don't know who he is. Oh, he's with that company. Great. Fine. I just don't have time right now. Right. So I think it's a combination of people finding value in what you do and what you provide. Number one. Number two, it's just being genuine and honest and trustworthy. I mean, we say all the time in sales, if I know you and I like you, there's a good chance we're going to do business together. So when you say getting decision makers in the room, before I get decision makers in the room, I want them to know me, and I'm going to try my hardest to get them to like me. And I'm going to do that because I'm coming in to help you, Mr. CFO. I'm coming in to help you, Director of X. Because I now want to help you succeed in whatever it is your goals, your wins are. So I'm trying to invest in the relationship, understanding what's important to you, not, hey, I got this bag of stuff over here, something I know you'll probably like. So let's talk about what I have and see if I can sell you something. Back to being a very transactional about me win, as opposed to, hang on, how do I make it a win for you? Right? That comes across if it's done correctly. It's not even done correctly. If you're just genuine and invested in people, and you're just, it generally comes across that way. And I think that's a huge piece of any, I hate the word sales. I'm glad I'm a business development manager in the role I have with CBiz and not a sales executive or a sales director or whatever. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm trying to solve a problem or support you and help you with your win. Big difference, in my opinion.
That's good. So you mentioned another home run that you made. So that was the home run for biotech. You mentioned another one you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So Kansas City, I'm in. Let's see, the 99. This would have been 01. I'm working for a company called Computer Associates. I'm a regional vice president, lead a sales team here in the Midwest. We're looking to establish, and they said, hey, let's go open an office in Tulsa, Todd. We'll make that part of your territory. Go open an office there. A lot of oil and gas industry in Tulsa. We've got some clients who bought a bunch of technology from us years ago, but have never used it. And go hire a rep for that, that kind of that geography down there. Okay. So in the process of doing that, I end up meeting with a client who finally said, sure, we'll see you. And in CRM, they bought all this technology, never used it, never put it to work. Nobody really understood why. Everybody just kind of left them alone. We didn't have anybody directly assigned to the account. It just became kind of dormant. So I said, all right, I'm going into Tulsa. These are the two accounts. This one says yes to a meeting. I thought I was meeting with one individual. And on the phone, he was very short with me and just didn't seem happy. But he was reluctant, but he gave me some time. So I show up. Lady escorts me into a conference room setting, not at the end, but just off to the right of the end of the table. It's a long conference room and probably a boardroom type of conference room. And I'm sitting there and I'm sitting there. I really don't have any idea what we're going to talk about. I know what they bought, but I don't really know what he's going to ask me. Why are we going to have this kind of meeting with just two of us? It's a big conference room, whatever. He walks in, eight other people walk in behind him. I've got all the VPs, all the directors, and the CIO was no CFO in the room at the time. No, CIO. So I have all these people in the room. And they just start peppering me with questions. Had no idea what I was going to be doing. They knew I represented Computer Associates. They knew I was a regional vice president, led a sales team. They knew I was here to talk about what they acquired from us. That was all I knew. One question after another, one question. I'm taking notes. I'm responding to some things I know I can respond to. Other things I'm like, I don't know the answer, but give me a minute to take this note down and I'll come back, right? And so they all just fire all these questions at me. We wrap up and I got pages of concerns and comments and, you know, on and on and on. It's probably one of the toughest meetings I've ever been in. The individual who booked the call with me and gave me the opportunity to come in, as everybody exits the room, he kind of sticks around for a second, walks me out to the door. He's like, he goes, that was a hard meeting, wasn't it? That was hard. I go, yeah, that was. And he goes, I gotta hand it to you. You stayed in there and you kind of hung in and we threw a lot at you. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what you're going to do with when you come back. And I said, all right, so here's what I'll promise you, I'm going to give you the answers to all of these things. What I don't necessarily know is that it may not be tomorrow. So just, I appreciate a little grace. It may take me a week or longer to find these answers. He goes, I understood. And so immediately started checking them off, giving him answers, checking them off, going down the list. We meet again probably 3 weeks later, and he brings some of the same people in. And it's like, all right, Todd, we well want to make some of this go to work. We've bought it. We want to start to put this to work. How do we do that? Here's what we do. Bring in some architects. We start putting stuff together. Parts and pieces start to be assembled. And then all of a sudden they're like, well, we need more of this. We'd like to have some more of that. We want that. Well, how do we get that? Long story short, that conversation turned into one of the largest security sales in Computer Associates history. It was a little over $3 million in total sales. And my quota for that year was about half of that. And so it ended up being, the deal got closed on Christmas Eve, 12/31, I believe of 01, and it got closed in an ice storm, and I had an individual rep who I just hired. He was about 90 days in the job. He's driving his four-wheel drive in ice. This is before electronics and digital signatures and all this stuff, right? We got to go get this deal signed so we can book it so the product can then ship so it can count for that year and it can count for the incentive plans and on and on and on. And the client agreed to all of it. Largest deal that ever been booked. So propelled me in different directions with my career. And then 2 weeks later, I get a call, which is a whole other conversation, from the Attorney General of the state of New York. Says, Todd, I need you on an airplane. I understand you were part of a deal that got signed with a company in Topeka, Kansas. And we're in the process of prosecuting a bunch of executives at the company you work for. And you were part of this transaction. Is that correct? And, you know, I get this phone call and I'm like, holy crap, what? And so then I had to quickly answer. And
plead the fifth. How should you quickly answer if I'm on pins and needles? So
I go from this mountaintop experience with this deal that just got signed to like a couple weeks later thinking I'm going to New York to be deposed for one deal that I was part of that had no idea. Well, it turns out the deal got signed the same date on December 31st. We never shipped the product, but we counted it. So from a revenue recognition perspective, apparently executives in the company I worked for at the time were recognizing revenue but not shipping it. That's a big no-no in the accounting world, accounting and finance world. And so there were 10 or 12 different counts on a bunch of executives that sadly, a few of them ended up in orange jumpsuits and most of them got fired. And then the day I'm driving to the airport here in Kansas City to get on a plane to go to New York, I get a call from that attorney general's office. And they said, it wasn't the attorney general at that time, it was somebody else. And then she said, you do not need to come. They've all, they decided to plead it out or something of that nature. And so we don't need your testimony. So what a crazy world in sales can be sometimes. But you go from these big mountaintop experiences to these, oh my God, what just happened kind of experiences and everything in between.
Yeah, that's a wild one. That's a wild one. I don't know how I'd respond to that phone call initially either. I'm over here like my mind very quickly be like, do I need to be talking to an attorney right now?
I called one and they said, no, Todd, you're not personally liable for any of this stuff. You don't need to have legal representation. You're going in because these are the things they want to know and they're doing fact finding. And you just happen to be the local sales leader who was responsible for that agreement and that relationship with that account. So that's why you're being part of it. But you are not in any way. So I did have that. I did make that phone call because I'm like, what I do, you know, you mean it's not every day you get a phone call from the attorney of New York State Attorney's Office.
No, no kidding. That sounds like no small thing either.
Yeah.
Wow. What exciting experiences and what exciting wins. And that's really interesting too, because that, you know, that example you gave, it almost sounds like you were after more goodwill for the company as a whole, and that just happened to turn into one of your largest deals. I mean, on one hand, it's like obviously repairing the relationship might lead to large deals. But you could also just as easily make the argument that, like, you might be blowing up the deal and they make no future deals. Like, if you go in there, you're going to find out the truth, which is, oh, man, we bought all this stuff. It was the worst decision ever. And, you know, is there any way you can take it back, Todd?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Parts of that conversation happened. And the good news is that at part of the transaction, we did credit and take some things back in exchange for other things. So, you know, it goes back to just doing the right thing when the right thing isn't sometimes very easy, right? It's the right thing for the client. If I'm going to benefit from it, I'm not trying to quantify in my head. Does that mean a new sale? Does that mean this? I'm just simply do the right thing and hopefully earn the opportunity to have the next conversation, whatever that looks like, that could result in something as a win for me.
Okay, so fast forwarding from that, what kind of catches you up to where you're at today?
What catches me up to where I am today? So,
yeah, I'm kind of giving you the opportunity to fill in some blanks before we start talking about the today
stuff. So there was a you know, technology, sales, marketing. I left that job. Somebody convinced me, instead of traveling 3 or 4 days a week and being, I had 3 little ones under the age of 3 at home, that I could take a job where I could be home every evening. I'm like, okay, tell me more. And it just so happened to be going into the mortgage business. So in 2001, I left that role and went into the mortgage business, took a job at 100% finance or 100% commission. And if you think about the mortgage industry today and where it was in the early 2000s, much different industry. But I worked there from 01 to 09, and then the housing market, you know, to crash in 08. And so mortgages,
I was wondering, I'm over here like,
shut itself down because it just, right. And so then I went back into technology. So there was a small stop there. It was 100% commission.
And did that bring you to Kansas City? Sorry, up to this point,
no,
you were
saw
Topeka.
No, okay. I was already in Kansas City. It was just a different role where I wasn't traveling all the time.
Okay.
That was
what brought you to Kansas City?
The job with Abbott Laboratories brought me to Kansas City. Moved me from Wichita to Kansas City. Yeah.
Okay.
I had a small stop in Maryland for a year and a half, a stop in Minnesota for a year and a half. My son was born in Maryland before we moved back here. That would have been, when was he? He was born in 98. So that was 98. So a couple stops outside of that. But we came back to Kansas City. It's where family and friends are. And so when you have a family, we had our first was born in Maryland, the other two here in Kansas City. And that brought us back here.
Yeah.
But if I think about today and I go backwards, just go, you know, this role that I have today and go backwards to the, say, 5 years, I work for a company right here, Pomeroy, for about 5 years in a technology role in business development. And, I walked out of, I qualified for President's Club 2 years ago. So if I could do some math here, that would have been 23. Got to President's Club and learned that they had fired the executives, all the executives except one across the board. We're a private equity owned company at the time. And they let go of my VP and a whole bunch of others. And I was introduced at a President's Club trip to the new executives that are going to run the company. And if you know anything about private equity, they're looking for a return on investment, EBITDA at 14% or better. And we weren't anywhere close to that. And so they said, all right, here's the line. Above the line, you're gone. Below the line, you can stay. And they just made some major, major cuts. After 5 years with the company, I'm like, do I want to stick around and wait for them to take this part and this part and this part and put us all together in some new company and wait for the smoke to clear and then spend most of my days listening to frustrated customers? I don't think so. So as I started dusting the resume off and kind of thinking about, well, what does this look like next? 5 years of the company, did well, just come off of President's Club, enjoyed the people I was working with, had a great team that surrounded me of solution architects, support engineers, great boss, on and on and on, really enjoyed it. What do I do next? And back to relationships and people you know, just so happened to see on LinkedIn an individual taking on a new role, and I hadn't talked to him while, so I reached out to him. I said, hey, congrats, what are you doing now? And so he started talking me through why he took the role, and then we were sort of wrapping up, and he goes, hey, by the way, I'm struggling to help our recruiting and department figure out if we can't find any replacements. Everybody we interview just doesn't get it, or they're not the right fit, or on and on and on. And he goes, know anybody? And I go, well, tell me about the role. And then all of a sudden he goes, well, what about you? You just told me you're kind of thinking about moving or switching jobs. And I'm like, maybe. He goes, well, why don't we do this? I'll put you in touch with our recruiting, local recruiting individual, and you guys have a conversation and see what you think. That conversation led to 9 more electronic, digital, virtual interviews and a job offer. And that's what Seed is. And so that was May of 2023. Yeah. So I'm 18 months, something like that here. Or was it 24? Can't do the math. But anyway, I'm working on about 18 months in the current role. And why did I come to this role? Because of that. And just a different environment. Had no idea I would ever found myself talking to accountants, CPAs, and, you know, but it's not about what we do. Our solution is tax, audit, accounting, and advisory services, right? Benefits and insurance. It's about solving problems and helping others. So, you know, the widget is sort of interchangeable in most respects, right? The conversations are going to be different, obviously, and potentially the individuals up and down the executive, the C-suite, if you will, are going to be potentially different. I focus more on CIOs and CTOs here in this role and more into, you know, chief accounting officers, chief CFOs and COOs. But it's really kind of the same conversation around where's the pain points, where's the problems, where are the partnerships you love, why, where are the ones you don't, how do I help, that kind of stuff.
That's fantastic. Cool. I mean, it sounds like a lot of it has been in biz dev almost kind of since the beginning a little bit. Because even in that finance and insurance role for a dealership, you were probably getting a decent bit of exposure to that.
Yeah, there were 2-3 stops where I led sales teams. And I enjoyed learning about that. And at the time, that was great experience. What I've learned going forward in a couple of different roles in the last 10 years, I would say, I just enjoy taking care of me, myself, and I, and building relationships and helping clients. I always say the hardest part about any job is people, right? Get the people out of the way. Our jobs are easy. And so, you know, the middle layer, kind of that director, VP field role that leads sales and marketing teams, that's a hard, hard role because you're feeling the pressure coming from the top and you're trying to help those coming the other way. And you're kind of sandwiched between critical decisions and hard things.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. So now that we're kind of caught up here, because you're working a few different roles. Is there one in particular we want to zero in on?
Let's talk about five capitals in the M5 movement, just because it applies to kind of the relationship building and the coaching and just serving and helping others. And then it kind of focuses, that sort of comes out of and similar role with Father's Club, when you think about men in general. So I think that'd be a good place to go.
Let's zero in on that. What are you doing for that? How's that coming?
So when I think about all these different roles that I've had over the years outside of the W-2, the professional role, just leaning in and trying to support others. And I think about, you know, the experiences that I had as an individual, as a father, as a kid growing up, now a single father or living a split family, et cetera, et cetera. You get to a point in life where you kind of step into these stages where now how do I make impact and how do I give back? It's one thing to pay bills, save for the future, retirement, you know, buy nice things, whatever, pay your mortgage. Those are great things. But what is it that you can do outside of that? And so Five Capitals is just a great platform that helped me get a certificate or a certification, if you will, in coaching. And why is that important? Well, I don't directly have or don't have the experience of that in a direct way, right? But I've been doing it most of my life. And so I leaned on them to kind of give me that. And so that's helping me then launch into a new world where it's stepping in a couple different directions. It's helping men find leadership in their professional life as well as their personal lives. But I would then also take that piece of it as one piece of the lane, and another lane would be helping just executives in general. If we think about the conversation at C-Suite for Christ, once a month we bring executives together and we try to help them step into their faith and lead boldly in whatever they're doing, whether they're leading a sales team, leading an entire company, or they're just an individual that doesn't have any direct reports. But I would argue everybody that's in the workforce, in the workplaces, leading in some way. And so we think about those concepts. Well, how do I help someone else do that? And, oh, by the way, how can I do that in a transactional way where I help you? And then that's how I make my living. And so that's really what I'm doing. It's kind of looking and planning for the future when W-2 says we're done with you and most people would be retiring. I want to continue to have a career path that allows me to do the same things, but not I'm selling a solution, a product, or whatever. I'm helping you. How do I help you personally? How do I help you professionally? Right. And I would argue in our world today, corporate America sort of strayed from, leaders being able to have time and being able to have the tools and use their experience to then lead others. So what happens in many cases, big companies or small companies, HR comes up with HR and benefits come up with this great plan. Sales and marketing says, sure, we want to adapt that. And we get a webinar once a quarter on something that is useful or valuable to helping us in our roles as leaders. Okay. So how am I engaging that? Probably virtually. What am I doing while I'm listening? A bunch of other things I shouldn't be. And if I really did hear what you were trying to help me with, what do I do with that tomorrow? What do I do with that 2 months from now? How do I handle that? And am I going to recall that? Because if I'm not being intentional with whatever I just heard, most people don't. So I would argue most companies have really strayed away from quality and time and energy and effort built around finding their emerging leaders, the people that are important in an organization. They're going to help lead that organization, whether you're at the bottom of the rank or you're the CEO, everybody in between, right? How do you lead people? How do you lead them in meaningful ways? How do you get those relationships internally? If I know you, Sam, and I like you, and I work for you. I'm going to trust you, and that's going to make my job better. I'm going to feel better about what I do, and therefore you're going to feel better about a relationship. I'm going to be more engaged, and we're both going to be successful because we have that. If Sam only cares about Todd and the bottom line of what I produce, and I'm an interchangeable part or piece, and if I don't hit the number, I'm off. He's going to take and move me on. Then that's just a transactional relationship again, and I'm not going to be there long. And then you're going to be frustrated as a middle-level manager that your team's constantly turning over, and you just need to be looking inside at yourself. So for me, that five capitals gives me the framework. The M5 movement is really trying to get individuals to understand both personal and professional. And we talk about what's the mindset first. How many people have the right mindset about their job? What's the mechanics? What are you doing on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis to make yourself better at different things that you're doing as far as your profession? What's the motivation? Why are you in your job, yeah. Sam? Why are you and I sitting here today talking and having this conversation? What's our motivation for that? And then once we figure those things out, how do we continue the momentum? And some people are very good at doing it on their own. Most people aren't. They need coaching. They need somebody to help them along. They need a size 12 boot and you know what, once in a while. And then finally, do I have a mission? You know, what's my mission in life? Do I have a family mission? Do I have a personal mission? Do I have a professional mission? Right? So those are the five M's as part of the M5 movement. And that's what we're talking about is where can I lean in and help you in those areas, no matter where you are in your career or your personal life. And so that's something that's just kind of getting started, but has really been sort of boiling and coming to the surface through the things I've been doing with C-Suite, the things I've been doing with Father's Club, with the mental wellness workshops, the things I've learned in my professional career, the things I've learned personally as I think about, you know, being a single dad coming up almost 15 years as a divorced man who's 60 years old. And you're like, okay, what does my life look like, you know, going forward? And how do I impact others? And how do I impact this world in a positive and meaningful way? And that's going to be outside of a conversation with CBiz or Abbott Laboratories or Computer Associates or Pomeroy or any of the other companies that I work for over the years.
That's exciting. That's very exciting, Todd. So I'm about ready to start to move into wrap up. Is there anything you feel like we've missed that we should have hit on?
No, I don't think so. I think we caught most of the stuff. I mean, maybe one piece of it, and you know, back to the guy lane, the dad man lane, is I've been part of a men's group since 2011. And we meet once a week every Monday night from 7 o'clock. And it's unless there's a Chiefs game on, which there is tonight, so we won't be meeting tonight, but we will be watching football together. That men's group is a community of guys. There's 17 of us. A few guys have stepped in and out of that group. Chapters of life cause you to have different things, and some things are more prioritized than others, and you get busy with other lanes in your life. But anyway, this group has been together since 2011. A big chunk of them came in 2005 to 2008 time frame, or sorry, 2011, 2014, said that wrong. And here we are almost, 11 years in, and I would argue whether you're a man or a woman, if you don't have a tribe that you trust that can walk with you in life, whether it's raising kids or it's going through hard things, you know, losing parents or, you know, God forbid having cancer or some major operation or disease you got to go through, or, you know, struggling with raising teenagers who are, you know, smoking weed and doing things they shouldn't be doing, and right, and all of those things. You can't do it on your own. And so that's been a huge piece of my life, was that tribe of guys. And we've created a trust and a transparency and an accountability that you just, it takes, the world, in my opinion, doesn't know how to do this very well. And so if there's another piece of the leaning in and passion, is every time I meet somebody who, you know, is, and I hear these little things that your spidey senses up, so many guys are looking for community, and we're just not good at it. Women are really good at finding community and talking about their feelings and, you know, sharing and being transparent and all that stuff. We don't like to do that stuff. So that's another big piece of the world that I think is missing. And I'm just grateful that I have a bunch of good, solid dudes around me. And quite honestly, and the connections with their families and their wives has been so meaningful as well. It's not just the guys. So.
Yeah, that's huge. To your point about the world today, I think we've lost the ability to be intentional with our time. I think it's a big part of it. There's just so many things vying for our time. Maybe yep. It's a new skill we have to develop, being intentional for our time. Because the notion, I don't have time for this or I don't have time for that, what you're actually saying is within the list of things that I've made priority for and made myself accountable for, this isn't in that. But when you understand that, though, too, you can then also understand, should this be a priority? Should this be something I make myself accountable for?
Which takes you right back to why everybody needs a coach. I'm a firm believer, having spent enough time now, I wish I would have embraced a coach in my early 30s and 40s, even if it was once a month or once a quarter, in a more purposeful, meaningful way. It's no different than the conversations now we have coming out of the pandemic and the crazy world we live in for the last 5 years. Going and spending time with a professional counselor, somebody who's trained in counseling, spending that time and energy shouldn't be an ER visit. It should be more like a normal routine checkup. I go to the gym. I work out my health. I go see my doctor to make sure my physical. Why am I not going and taking care of my heart and my soul, right? And yeah. So it's much that same thing, right? And I think that's where the world is, and corporations, I said earlier, are slowly but surely coming around to the fact that we don't know how to do this stuff anymore. So let's go find a Sam. Let's go find a Todd. Let's go find somebody who understands my culture, can come in, embrace my executives, and help me build leaders and help me build a community of people who love working in and build a culture that I'll keep them. They're not just here for the transaction.
Yeah, yeah. So moving into wrap up, there are two questions we like to ask every guest. Okay. So the first one is, we have a motto over here that goes, if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Who's been a giant in your life, Todd, that you'd like to pay homage to in this moment?
Wow. A giant in my life. Well, I don't think there's just one. That's going to be hard for me to narrow it down to just one. I would say, you know, I always say when people say growing up, in a small town and divorced family, et cetera, who would be the giant? Then I would lean to my grandfather. My grandfather taught me just life in general, hard work, taught me how to shoot a gun, taught me how to shake a hand, taught me how to have adult conversations, look people in the eye, taught me the value of just life in general. And so I think, when I think about my younger days and the formative times that you go through, he passed away right before my graduation of my senior year in high school. And so I would say he was probably in that piece of my life. He was the giant then. Definitely. Not far behind my grandfather, yeah. My grandmother, who built my treehouse, who took me to church, who on and on and on would sit and listen to me and things that I don't think she really even understood, but she just, as grandmothers do, they just have that amazing ability and experience. So, I have to add her into that too. I stood on both shoulders.
If there was a pithy saying or general rule of thumb that you found to be true again and again and again, what would it be?
You know, the Zig Ziglar comment always comes up. You know, if I help enough people get what they want, I'll get what I want. In my signature block, if you look at my email, I don't know if I even got one up because I haven't looked at it in so long. That's kind of sad. I can't remember. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business. How you leave others feeling becomes your trademark. Saw that some time ago, many, many years ago, and just kind of stuck with me. So, and then the last part is just go out and serve others, help others. And, you know, it's amazing what happens when you serve somebody else and do it with, No, nothing attached, right? You're not looking for something in return. I think that brings back so much joy to your life in general, probably more than you asked, but there you go.
Everything I asked. Thank you, Todd.
Doesn't fit on a business card, but that's okay.
I really appreciate you making the time and being with me here today. This has been an absolute joy.
Absolutely. I agree. And thank you for inviting me, and love to see how this goes and where it goes next. And, you know, thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye, everybody.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.